on Books and Arts, where we turn now to the story of Bad King John and the Barons. Do you know that rhyme, John, John, Bad King John, he shamed the throne that he sat on? That's a children's rhyme that was popular in England a while back, written by Eleanor Fargen. And as the poem goes on to explain, the Barons got so sick of King John's lawless ways that they bought a deed down to Runnymede. Runnymede is a meadow in England. It's meadow on the Thames, and it's the place where the deed Magna Carta was sealed. We don't say signed, we say sealed. So the date was the 15th of June, 1215. This is a time when the great Aboriginal continent that we now call Australia didn't appear on any English maps, of course. So I wonder what Magna Carta has to do with us. Well, there's a display at Canberra's Museum of Australian Democracy called Magna Carta, An Australian Story, and the curator of the show is Stephanie Fenningworth. Stephanie, welcome to the show.
Hi, Michael. How are you?
I'm terribly, terribly well. So I guess lots of us are up to speed about Magna Carta now because we're covering it here on RN quite extensively. But for anyone who's missed that coverage, so briefly, just tell us what it is.
Well, Magna Carta is one of the most famous legal documents in the world. It was written on a piece of sheepskin parchment, as you said, in 1215, and it set down the rules limiting the power of the monarchy and safeguarding basic human rights and freedoms.
Yes, I mean, you could argue that it's a treaty between a despotic king and the nobility, and it doesn't have anything to do with the rest of us, except when you look at the language of it, it's very expansive and very idealistic.
Some of it is, yes. You could say that it was a contract or a peace treaty between the barons and King John. In today's language, the barons were the one percenters, I guess. They were wealthy men who held large rural estates in exchange for services to the king, and a lot of the 63 clauses of Magna Carta are to do with specific grievances they had, very specific grievances that are to do with conditions in feudal society. But amongst those clauses are, as you say, some much looser clauses that were written in a much more general and a flexible and elastic way that have proved to be very useful over the centuries.
Well, about the rights of free men is the key phrase, and that, I guess, it's how you define free men.
Yes, yes. Unfortunately, the lives of serfs and peasants toiling in the fields are not dealt with Magna Carta. This is not a product of a popular uprising in any way. But what's interesting about Magna Carta is it codified and wrote down rules that people had been using for centuries to protect their rights and freedoms.
Yeah, and really the story is not about what it meant on that day. It's about the way it's evolved and been appropriated to stand for much broader and more generous principles than perhaps the barons had in mind.
Absolutely. I mean, it's from Magna Carta that we get the ideas or the proof set down in writing of the right for people to access the courts or to not be locked up without evidence or to have a fair trial, to be judged by a qualified and independent judiciary, to have their punishment fit the crime and also have a say in how they were governed. These clauses of Magna Carta are incredibly important today.
So, Stephanie, if you put together this exhibition called Magna Carta, An Australian Story, we better talk about the Australian story. So
yes.
When the first fleet sails into Sydney Harbour in 1788, into the great Aboriginal territories there, was Magna Carta part of the mindset of Governor Phillip, or more importantly, I suppose, of David Collins, who was the chief legal officer there on the First Fleet?
Absolutely. Magna Carta codifies English common law principles, and they quite literally came on the First Fleet in a set of books written by an eminent jurist called William Blackstone. And these books, which set out the laws of Great Britain of the time, became a kind of instruction manual, because in the penal colony there were no lawyers. David Collins, the deputy judge advocate, had no legal training. So they literally used these books as instruction manuals on how to set up the rule of British law in that new penal colony. And we do look at that in our exhibition, how Magna Carta came to be part of our legal DNA and also our legal conscience as well, because often it's not the the word and letter of Magna Carta, but it's its principles and ideas that are important and continue to be important today.
I'm very in tune with this, Stephanie, because I've long believed that the convicts should be thought of as people who had rights rather than people who'd been abandoned in a gulag at the end of the world. There was actually a new deal offered to these people, a chance of a better life than they could possibly have had rotting in an English prison.
Yeah, what's really interesting about this setup in the penal colony of New South Wales was that convicts had rights that their counterparts in England did not have. They had the right to a trial, to be considered innocent until they were proven guilty, to sue for breach of contract and all that sort of thing. But conditions in the colony were not perfect. I mean, the governor had a final say in everything, which is a bit despotic, not as bad as King John, but, you know, they had the final say. And in a place where most of the newcomers were convicted criminals, there wasn't a system of trial by a jury of one's peers either. So in the exhibition, we showcase a publication by Jeremy Bentham, the great social reformer and philosopher and barrister, where he pointed out a few little discrepancies, one of which was that there were also free settlers in the colony, not just convicts, and they were denied the right to trial by jury of their peers, and they were also denied the right to have a say in their government. There wasn't parliamentary representation in the early days of Sydney. So he declared this state of affairs repugnant to Magna Carta, and this wasn't the first time Magna Carta was used to demand human rights in Australia and also to highlight when those rights are threatened.
It's very moving to hear someone appealing to Magna Carta in 1800, especially Jeremy Bentham doing it, because you imagine someone going to court today and appealing to Magna Carta would be seen as slightly eccentric, perhaps even as a vexatious litigant.
Eccentric, yes, but there are examples of people citing Magna Carta throughout the last 200 years. Striking shearers in Queensland in 1890s reacted very strongly to a draconian law passed by the Queensland government called the Peace Preservation Act, which basically locked people up for 6 months without trial on mere suspicion of being a striker. More recently, Albert Langer, who's now called Arthur Dent, he's changed his name, but in the 1980s and 1990s, he went to court and cited Magna Carta when he was defending himself against fighting for his right, rather, to advocate a system of voting that that he believed would help siphon votes to minor parties and independent candidates. He wasn't very happy with the current voting system, and he believed it was rigged to benefit major parties, and he used Magna Carta in his court case, in his defence.
Which raises the question, I guess, whether there are aspects of life today which you might argue violate the principles of Magna Carta.
Yes, well, there's lots of examples all over the place, really, but I guess something that was very interesting and that we've included in our exhibition is examples, for example, the War Precautions Acts of 1914 to 1916, where the government used its defence powers granted by the Constitution to draft a series of acts which silenced, imprisoned and deported people considered to be subversive to the war effort. And it's ironic because the war was apparently to defend some of the liberties that are expressed in Magna Carta, and yet at the same time, in order to pursue that war, people were being denied some pretty basic civil liberties at home. In fact, Sir Robert Garran, the Solicitor General, actually said later on that this was a breach of Magna Carta. Yes.
Yes, and the government was quite reluctant to wind back the War Precautions Act when the war ended. They quite enjoyed having those powers. This is an art show, Stephanie. We should see if there's an arts angle here. Can you think of one for us?
Yes, there is an arts angle. Oh, there's lots of arts angles, actually. I mean, you think of Magna Carta as a kind of a muse, but also, as I said before, a legal conscience. We have in our exhibition a couple of examples. One, of course, is The Castle, the film, the 1997 film The Castle, probably the most exciting and fun film about the Constitution ever made, in which Daryl Carrigan cites principles that have been inherited from Magna Carta, which he calls the law of bloody common sense, to protect his property. And he cites section 51, 31 of the Constitution, which is to do with the government being being able to make laws for the property acquisition on just terms. And he says that you're not allowed to do that. And as anyone's seen the film will know that he was successful. That's a form of, I guess, visual art, an expression of Magna Carta in art. And another expression of Magna Carta is the Yerkala Bach petitions from 1963, which we also discuss in our exhibition. Kevin Rudd said in 2013 that the Bach petitions were the Magna Carta for the Indigenous peoples of Australia. In 1963, leaders from the Yolngu people from Yirrkala and Gove Peninsula drew up some petitions to protest against the excision of a significant amount of country for bauxite mining, which went ahead without consultation with them. And these petitions combine painted bark panels. And like Magna Carta centuries before, they're a statement of grievance and assertion of rights. And they're very beautiful artworks as well. They consist of two panels because the area threatened by the bauxite mine cross the boundaries of two moieties, the yeah. Dua and the Yirrkala.
Well, they
and
are
they're gorgeous pieces of artwork.
They're absolutely.
In this context, they're also assertions of legal title as well.
Yes, that is art meeting law. That's a beautiful example of that. We've got to stop there, Stephanie. Thank you so much for coming in and telling us about
thank you very
the
much
Australian
for having me.
Story of Magna
there
Carta.
Are many stories.
Stephanie's the curator at the Museum of Australian Democracy. The exhibition is called Magna Carta, an Australian Story. And I'd love to know if you've got some good examples of how Magna Carta has influenced the arts. You could post a comment on our Facebook page. You'll find us at RN Books and Arts.